Michael Jackson's 1982 album Thriller is the top-selling album of all time with about 66 million copies sold. More, depending on who you ask. Don't expect that record to fall or even be threatened anytime soon. It's got a big lead over the next top seller, the Eagles' Greatest Hits. Plus, if our next guest is right, the album's heyday is over. Figures from the Recording Industry Association of America show that in 1999, nearly 940 million CDs were sold. That's just CDs. Last year, according to Nielsen Music, only about 170 million albums were sold. That includes the CDs and digital albums and vinyl and cassettes. So why aren't people buying albums anymore? Might they ever make a comeback? Bobby Osinski is a music industry veteran, having worked as a producer, engineer, and musician. He's the author of 24 books and a contributor to Forbes. We're talking about his recent piece now titled, The Music Album is Dead, But Not Everyone's Accepted It Yet. Bobby, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Good to hear Thriller again.
It's been a while for me, too. Now, why is the album dead, more or less, not just a hurting or on life support?
Well, people are not consuming multiple songs from the same artist like they used to. It used to be something that everyone would do. They'd sit down with their vinyl record or CD, and they would pay attention for a long period of time to that one artist, to that one particular piece of plastic. And not any longer. We now live in a streaming society. It's a singles society. And I don't know that it's better or worse, but it certainly is different.
When I read your piece, I thought, oh, this is kind of a bummer. All those other people, not me, I've stopped listening to albums. Then I thought about my own listening habits, and I go online, I listen to the song I want, or I stream a randomly selected group of songs along the lines of things I like. It's pretty rare that I go and intentionally listen to an album, except maybe a CD in the car. What has changed? Has the streaming changed us, or is there something about our attention spans that have changed?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both. And of course, the music industry evolves and changes, and it changes especially with technology. And this goes all the way back to, we can trace it from sheet music onward. Every time there's a new piece of technology, the music industry is pretty much on the forefront of accepting it and incorporating it. And then that changes consumer patterns as well. So now with streaming, we're just in the latest iteration of that. That being said, I don't know that it's that different than radio, which we've been consuming for, what, 100 years now. And, of course, it's always been, except for a brief period, I think, in the late 60s, early 70s, in the whole realm of FM, for the most part, it's been a singles distribution medium.
You say that the music industry adjusts, but have artists, music producers really adjusted? Are people still tilting at the windmill and trying to produce that album and get people to buy it?
Well, I hate to say that, yes, that's the case. I think if you're a younger artist, and especially it seems like in the R&B hip-hop community, they're much hipper to this because they've been used to doing things a little bit differently and being rebellious for quite a while now. But when it comes to most artists, they still see the CD as kind of like the Holy Grail. And that being said, there's not too much of a reason to create a CD these days. And there's lots of reasons not to. And it would be to the benefit of the artist not to do so in many ways. I mean, one being the fact that when you create a CD or an album, let's just say an album because it can be distributed lots of different ways, what ends up happening is you have one piece of product and one event to promote it. When you take 10 individual songs and you release them once a month, once every 6 weeks, once every 2 months, then you have 10 separate events to, first of all, acclimate the public to 10 different songs. And you and I know that what ends up happening when you buy an album, you gravitate to one or two songs and you listen to those most of the time. And then the other ones aren't exposed at all. And especially a lot of times you'll buy an album, you'll listen to it once through and pick that one song and always go back to it. But now when you have multiple releases, there's again, more promotional events, but there's also more of a chance for the song to be exposed to a greater number of people.
Talking to Bobby Osinski, music industry veteran, about the death maybe of the album. You know, a group of songs released all at the same time in a particular order, whether that's on CD or vinyl or digital download. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you still listen to an album maybe from beginning to end? Do you buy music in album-sized chunks? Again, whether it's in a physical medium or downloading. 800-642-1234 is the number to call in. And Bobby, you wrote that some people, as you were just talking about, have moved to that model of forget the album, we're going to release a single now and maybe in a couple months or a few weeks, whatever. And maybe that's not so new, because that's how things used to be a long time ago, 60 years ago or so, in the music industry.
Yeah, in the 50s and 60s and even into the early 70s, if you didn't sell enough singles, then you never got a chance as an artist to make the album. Everything was based around the success of not one single, unless it was a runaway huge hit, but a couple. And that would prove that you were worthwhile as an artist, or your music was worthwhile, or there's an audience out there for what you're doing, in order to take that next step to create the album. And now, well, let's say in the 70s, that all changed, mostly because the music industry made a whole lot more money on albums. And when it seemed like that was taking off and it was becoming a more acceptable format, then I think the music industry looked more at it from a revenue model than they did from a creative model. So everything changed. And now we're kind of going back, much to the chagrin of the music industry, because certainly it would much prefer to sell albums, again, bigger chunk. But, you know, we've not been there for quite a while now.
As a music person, do we lose something? Is there something unique about the creative form that is the album, a series of songs, maybe whether they're on a theme or not, but they're put in that order, a lot of thought gets put into it. Do we lose something if we lose the album?
Well, yes and no. I have to say that I just finished producing an album not that long ago, producing and mixing it. And when it was finished, there was a lot of thought that went into the song order of the album. Now again, it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but what I did was I strongly urged the band not to do an album, strongly. And they said, well, our fans insist on an album. And that may be true, because they had core fans that actually wanted it. So, okay, there's an exception to everything. But that being said, getting back to your question, there was a lot of brain cells that died over the sequence of the album. And this has always been the case to some degree. Songs are chosen strategically. And the reason why is, of course, you want to maintain as much interest as possible. So you try to make sure that no two songs up against one another are the same tempo or in the same key, or it's just enough of a change that will keep the listener interest. Now, that certainly worked back in the day of the album when everybody was listening to them, but it's so much less relevant these days that it's hardly even worth talking about. That being said, the one place that does change is when the artist is actually creating a suite of songs that go together, a concept album, so to speak, where that's really important. And of course, I can see the value of it in that situation. That being the case, it so rarely happens when there is a suite of songs that go together and intelligently go together. You know, it's one thing to have a whole bunch of songs and put them back to back and try to make them say something, try to make them into a story. And a lot of people try to do that and it doesn't really work. But if they're written as a group, as a whole, as a concept, that's a little bit different, but it so rarely happens.
We're talking to Bobby Osinski, talking about his recent piece in Forbes, "The Music Album is Dead, But Not Everyone's Accepted It Yet." You can join us at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy listening to albums from start to finish? Do you still do that? Is it something you used to do but faded away from? How do you experience music? Shuffled, online, downloaded? Do you download individual songs? Do you still buy a physical medium, a CD, an album? Do you listen to the whole thing? If you do, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also join the conversation on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up a conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon is often ranked as one of the greatest music albums of all time. Bassist and vocalist Roger Waters told Rolling Stone in 2011 that this is the band's first album that was, quote, genuinely thematic and genuinely about something. And it's that kind of hour-long or so cohesive message that our guest says people maybe don't have the patience to endure in one sitting. That's not how they listen anymore. Albums may be going away. Bobby Osinski, a music industry veteran, is with us, author of 24 books, contributor to Forbes, and you can join it at 800-642-1234. Is the album dead to you, or do you still listen to music, albums from beginning to end? And how do you do it? Do you stream it, download it, buy the CD, the album, the 8-track? 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. To your calls now, Richard is with us in Madison. Richard, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so back in 2005, I had an iPod, and a friend swore that he would never get an iPod because of something he called, like, musical ADD. And that sort of stuck with me. He gave me the Flaming Lips album, Yoshimi Battles with Pink Robots, and ever since then, I've always tried to listen to the entire album, and now I do it with Spotify, with YouTube, and since then, I've recently started going to CD stores and actually buying used CDs because it costs half as much as you can get them even through Amazon.
Richard, do you ever feel like it's a chore to get through maybe the two or three songs of an album you're not as into?
Well, I'm never looking for hits, you know. I'm actually trying to discover whether or not I like the artist. And I have been disappointed before, but generally I get a kick out of knowing that I'm going to try to absorb this whole album, that I'm supporting local businesses by buying used CDs.
Richard, thanks a lot for the call. I'm sure Richard's not alone, Bobby, but he's not the norm either, it sounds like.
Well, all I can say is good for you, Richard. That's, as you say, Rob, not the norm any longer. There's a shorter attention span for sure. I mean, one of the things that actually talks about attention span, when you look at the, or speaks to the attention span of listening to music, if you look at the stats, you find that songs today are much shorter than they've ever been. And, you know, of course, when we talk about singles, they've always been in the 3 minute, 3.5, maybe even pushing 4 minute range. And now we're down to just about 3 minutes, and even less in many cases. So it just goes to show that our attention span has changed, and that's probably because of the digital world that we live in today. Again, not better or worse. It's just different.
Thanks a lot for the call, Richard. We'll go next to Paul in Menominee Falls. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Great program. I grew up in the 70s, so you know, more of a creature of habit, and I probably have a hybrid kind of use of the albums. I like most people, there's songs I like and songs I don't. But I do find, and I still listen to CDs, I like albums. I think they're convenient for my taste, but I do like the fact that I'm exposed to songs that normally I would not be. So if I'm just, like your previous caller said, chasing a hit, you know, if I buy an album for that, then, you know, I'm going to hear other songs that I normally don't hear. So, you know, for me, for my taste, and I understand why people are, you know, obviously it's going to change. It's not going to stay the same. But I do like that aspect. So, great program.
Paul, thanks a lot for that. Thanks a lot for your call. And Bobby, that reminds me, there's some songs that are kind of the slow burn on an album, right? You might get the album, come in for the hit or two, and as you listen, you appreciate those other songs maybe even more. But in a world of just singles, are those slow burn songs that grow on you going to see the light of day?
Yeah, I was just going to go there, Rob. That's one of the downsides of being in a singles world, because we all know that a record label will pick the hits, that pick the songs that they believe will be the hit, and then they'll concentrate on promoting them. And there's been so many cases over the years where they've been wrong, and there has been something that everyone thought was a throwaway song that becomes the big hit. But you don't know unless you're exposed to it, unless people are exposed to it and could hear those things. So that's the downside. There may be lots of music that the masses would fall in love with, but they'll never hear it. At least the way things are going today, they're not going to hear it.
Thanks a lot for the call, Paul. We are talking about the past and maybe limited future of the album, the whole collection of songs that you listen to from beginning to end. Bobby Osinski with us. You can join in with your thoughts, your experiences at 800-642-1234 to John now in Elkhorn. John, hi.
How you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, John?
Well, here I am. I grew up listening to music in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I always listened to the whole album. I could tell you all the songs on the album and where they went. But I can imagine one of the reasons why we've gone away from this. It's become very convenient, depending on how you source your music, to go from song to song. Back in the day, I could tell you, 10th Avenue Freeze Out was the second song on this particular album. And you know what? To get to that song, you had to be able to drop the needle in that groove. And, you know, sometimes it was like, I'm a little bit too high. I'm not going to do that right now. But today, boom, you just go to the second song.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, John, thanks a lot. And a similar thing with cassettes. You want to listen to track two, you're probably best off listening to track one instead of fast-forwarding to just the right spot. Just the technology kind of determines this, Bobby.
Well, there you go. That's the adaptation of new technology by the industry and the consumer. Consumer doesn't care about the quality, never has, but cares about the convenience. So if we look at all of the distribution formats, they all move forward in terms of technology. So your example there, cassettes, you had to rewind or fast forward to get to where you wanted. And then as it was the same thing with the LP. You had to actually lift the needle, the tone arm, and find the right track. And then we get to the CD where it's random access, where you just say, I want track 11, and you go directly to track 11. And now we're in streaming, and it's even more convenient to actually select what we want or select a playlist or whatever it might be. So we're in a consumer world where convenience triumphs all the time. And that's one of the things that people sort of forget about in the industry. They'll focus on other things, thinking the consumer's going to go that way, but they never have. They've always looked for convenience first.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to talk about another possible upside here, Bobby. We've interviewed musicians from around Wisconsin on this show a lot. These are people who really hustle. They try to get the word out, and it's less resource intensive. There may be fewer gatekeepers if they had to do a whole album. That might be tough to overcome if they can just throw out singles here and there, you know, throwing spaghetti against the wall. It's easier for them to have a shot at getting that one song out than if they had to do this whole big project.
Yeah, you know, I just ran into that the other day where I had an artist wanting to email me the files for his album. And my response was, what decade are you living in? Because no one does that anymore. We all respond, especially if you're in the business, you want to get to things fast. And this is labels, managers, agents, anybody in the business, reviewers. So therefore, they want to stream and they want to be able to hit it fast. And they want, okay, tell me your top two or three songs. Let's get to it. Rather than me having to find my way through an album to figure out whether I like it and actually figuring out a way I should download it, if there's a CD that's sent to me, finding a player. I don't even own anything that will play a shiny plastic disc anymore. So there you go. It's a different world in how we look at it. But again, it's more efficient in many ways. So it's not a bad thing either.
Let's take one more caller. Liz is with us in Winona, Minnesota. Liz, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about Liz?
I am a member of a classical contemporary vocal quartet, and we've recorded a couple albums now. And every time we kind of mount the giant process of doing that with our, you know, a boutique label that we work with, it's kind of, that's the big question is, do we release an album? Do we make an EP? Do we just make a bunch of downloads that are available? Because there are so many options. And I liked the point you made earlier about the sort of shorter attention span and the 3-minute sort of single. In classical music or even contemporary classical music, that's not always the case. I mean, one of our next projects is an hour-long concert piece that is broken into smaller movements, but some of them make no sense unless they're in the context of this larger piece. So we kind of wonder, like, how do we present this to an audience? How do we do this?
And Liz, I'm going to jump in because we're just about out of time. Bobby, we don't need to dig into contemporary classical too much, but in general, it sounds like your advice to a musician and artist would be do the singles, not the whole album right now.
Yeah, it would be that, but again, it depends on your audience as well. If you do have an audience that expects longer pieces and expects an album, then that would be the way to go. Obviously, there are always exceptions.
Liz, thanks a lot for calling in. Bobby, I got to ask briefly as we wrap up, is there an album you still go back to and listen to from beginning to end?
No.
No. Not at all.
I wish I could say yes, but no.
I wish I could too. I think I can't. Bobby, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Rob.
That's Bobby Osinski, music industry veteran. He's worked as a producer, an engineer, and a musician. He's the author of 24 books. We've been talking to him about a recent piece he wrote. It's called The Music Album is Dead, But Not Everyone's Accepted It Yet. You can still weigh in with your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page.